Hey, what's going on? It's time for another wonderful episode of the Bill
Burt
Podcast. What's going on? We have an amazing, amazing guest. One of my favorite people in this business. We've been working together for almost 25 years. It has been 95, 96. The unbelievably hilarious, talented, never aging, just keeps getting better looking. DC Benny, everybody.
Hey, never aging. And I'll tell you what, you posted a picture on Instagram the other day, DC, where you were absolutely gorgeous.
Man, I've been putting those throwback pictures up there. And then, we got kind of a, you know, my wife monitors the feedback, and there was some kind of weird stalky thing that happened. So we had to take it down and for a minute. So we could see that and out, you know,
that's when, you know, you're good looking, you get a stalker, and especially as a guy to get a stalker, male or female. I mean, it's a difficult thing to pull off.
Bro, it was like this 30 years ago, this picture. It was 30 years. It's like a little, you know, 50s looking Herb Ritzy picture from way back in the day. You know, now I got crooked teeth. I got the gray hair. I mean, a little bit of a gut, you know.
you stop posting your old doo-wop band pictures when you were harmonizing around the burning trash can out in Brooklyn.
Me and Tom Shalhoub with the barbershop quartet, you know.
Tom Shalhoub, holy shit! I got to look that thing up now. What if
wait? Who were the best looking guys in comedy when we were working?
Well, let's at least intro DC to our listeners here. DC Benny, an amazing, amazing, amazing stand up comedian that I first started seeing back when the Boston Comedy Club was the Boston, before they had the nice marquee. They had that old sun baked red awning that turned pink, and then you couldn't just walk in. Remember, you had to walk in front of the stage and then go up into the back area, because how that was like walled off before they finally opened it up.
A little Muppet balcony thing in the
back. Where all these comics would sit up there. And DC was one of the first guys that I saw that could do any room, could do the white rooms, could do the black rooms, whatever, surf reality, the gay clubs. He just went up and fucking slayed every time. Early in the show, late in the show, early show, late show, just absolutely destroyed. And I was kind of sitting there like, I don't want to go on after that guy. So,
well, you know, but I think that's at that time in comedy, I think Bert and I were talking a little bit about this. You kind of had to be like that at that club. And you got to be like that. Bert got to be like that, where you just, you could flow with any audience, because that was a fucking war zone.
Or you weren't gonna survive. You had to figure out. I say this all the time, dude. I remember walking by the Boston Comedy Club early in my New York days and just looking at it during the day, and I got a sick to my stomach feeling. Like, that's how much that thing was living in my head of like, fuck, man. Like, what's the crowd going to be like tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Can there be a little bit of a suburban vibe? Because even like the white people in the crowd felt like they needed to have a little bit more of a fucking attitude or something. And that's been people like selling drugs right out front, all the spillover from Washington Square Park and shit. That was a terrifying place to go on. And Steinberg and Matt Frost, when you first came down there to audition, they used to try to bury you.
Oh, yeah.
So they would let the show get three quarters of the way in, and then they'd put you on after like Red Johnny and the Round Guy or Chappelle, or maybe not Chappelle. He always seemed to close it out, or Artel or one of these guys. It was just like, their whole thing was like, we're going to see if you're tough enough to play this club.
When I first came to the first time, I had that sinking feeling when I first saw that room. Neil Brennan was the doorman, okay? Mm-hmm. And the way you would audition was, you go on, like, he had like an open mic or something, and he goes, all right, you can go on last, but you got to pay me. I had to pay him like $15 to go on for him and one other person. He automatically didn't like me. So it was like one other person. I had to give him $15. I'm like, this is horrible, man. I just moved to New York. I'm like, this is how this shit works. You know, it was crazy, man. It was such a
that's hilarious.
The hierarchies of power in that room of like who booked it and then
Louis Schaefer.
Yeah.
Oh, Louis, yeah. And then the whole triangle of psychosis, it was the Barry Katz trickle down economics of psychosis. Oh, this, my God.
This is a Barry Katz New York Entertainment VHS tape.
I still have one of those.
You got one of those too?
I got one of those.
Oh, my God. I just,
hey, buddy, I got you. I got you college gigs, man. Listen, the check's going to be made out to me. If they give it to you, don't open the envelope. All right, you're getting $300. You're getting $1 a mile.
You're on fire, man.
You're on fire. God. You're the next guy that's going to pop. What was your name again?
So is that the tape he would send to colleges, DC?
Yeah.
Who's on that list?
Oh, dude. Let me go down. And I have another one with a whole it's got Jay Moore, Dane Cook, Jeff Ross, Reggie McFadden, Bobby Kelly, James Stephens III, Maceo, Jim Gaffigan, Pete Corielli, Patrice, Nick Swardson, Phil Tagg, Keith Robinson, Eddie Brill, Jordan Rubin, Judah Friedlander, Drew Frazier, Brian Scalaro, Paula Bell, Jim Norton, I mean, Gary Jesus. Goldman, Mike DiNicola, Arj Barker.
Dino.
Yeah, it's got like just a sticker, man. Just having this thing around is like a great little piece of history, man.
You know what's funny is I don't think he repped half of those guys.
No. He definitely did not.
He didn't rep Patrice, I know that. Yeah. I can get you anybody in New York. Just, you know, I'll just book them. And if they can't make it, I'll send someone who looks like them.
Oh, yeah, man.
Exactly. I remember, Steinberg. I remember meeting him, and I said, I was like, hey, Jason. And I remember he was standing to the side, and I tapped him on the shoulder, and he went like, he did like this real dramatic, like, hey, man, I'm in like the scene. Are you tapping me on the shoulder? They all had that vibe. I remember Frosty. I always tease Frosty about this. When I was first coming down there, he didn't like me. He didn't think I was funny. I remember him standing out in front of the Boston, and he saw me coming, and he goes like that. He sees me coming, and he just kind of goes, hey, man, what's going on? It's just like, can you at least hide it? I know I suck. Just give me the reps. I know I can get better at this, but it was just like he was seeing like, you know what's funny? As hard as the club was, it was so fucking exciting.
Yeah.
To be down there. And you could just feel it. You felt all of these guys were going to pop. I think Jay and Brewer had just got on SNL. Yeah. Chappelle just got the Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
I mean, you felt like, I mean, I was coming from the suburbs of Boston doing all of that shit. And then it was just like, it was crazy. It was like right there, but a million miles away.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. You saw these guys go from just, you know, doing sets to just blowing up, and it was tangible. It felt like achievable in a way. It felt not achievable, but it, because you could see it actually happening, and then there'd be showcases there. We, you know, Bert and I talk about this, you know, they have like these fucking 4-hour showcases of like everybody in New York. And then Barry would pack the middle with his guys, and then it'd be like everybody else. But it was a real, I do miss that. I do miss that kind of gritty time in comedy, you know, that like.
They cleaned it up too much, dude. They cleaned it like New York is just so fucking glossy now. It's like it got a giant Botox, you know, that Botox shiny face. Like that's kind of like, I don't want to like bum everybody up because I always say this about New York. So, I mean, it's not like it's all bad. There's some great comics that have come up and stuff, but like, you know, this whole thing where the crowd took over and they're going to tell comedians what's funny. It's just so fucking like, I don't know. That's be like, if I always said it'd be like, if I was watching a musician and I was telling him what chords he should be playing as someone who's fucking tone deaf and can't play guitar. You know what I mean? It's a really weird time. And I just wish comics would just continue, just keep saying what the fuck you're going to say. And they'll quit.
I just think we've been out of clubs for so long that we're mashing up what the internet is with real life is.
Because I'm not. I did the clubs in 2019 in New York City. It was the worst fucking experience I've had in New York. It was fucking horrific.
I saw you. I remember, man.
Dude, fucking dude. Oh.
You can't believe it's New York. You know?
Dude, it was fucking, it was. And then a couple of those clubs have become famous.
Yeah.
Like the club is famous.
Yeah.
So then it's like you're doing stand-up at like SeaWorld. Like, oh, you got all these touristy people. Where before, it was people like who wandered in off the street and they had to know somebody to come down to this fucking hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I remember like Page Six was going down to like the cellar just waiting for somebody to say something so they could sell newspapers because nobody's buying a fucking newspaper anymore.
You know, Jesus. Right before right before all this shit hit the fan with the pandemic and everything, I did this little room in Brooklyn. I'm like, it's Brooklyn. I'm gonna go drop by. It was a hot little room. And they had kind of changed whoever was booking it, whatever the situation, but this thing was always packed. I'd been doing it for years. And before I went on stage, the booker came up and they're like, listen, don't do any jokes about that are misogynistic, no rape jokes, and definitely no jokes about with accents from a country that you didn't actually come from. I'm like, what the fuck?
Then at that point, you'd be like, hey, thank you for writing me my set list.
Right? No, but I'm like, do you hear, I mean, all right, first of all, I'm not a rape joke guy or whatever, but I do characters. You're going to tell me, you know, I actually have to be from Pakistan now just to do a character. Or it was crazy, man.
That's what they want acting to be. They want acting to not be acting. Unless you're the person that actually lived that life, then you shouldn't be playing that role. It's just like, dude, that's the magic of acting.
Yeah.
Like you come from a completely different part. I mean, I understand the opportunity thing. I get that. But that whole fucking thing of just like, you're not playing this and like, I don't know. I don't even want to talk.
That only goes one way, too. That doesn't go the opposite way. Like, just to be fair, anyone I don't know the right way to say it, but the press group can play whatever role they want, but you like Hillary Swank can't.
In fairness to that, I don't see any Puerto Ricans playing Abraham Lincoln, if that's what you're suggesting.
Go watch
oh my god, I can't believe Wesley Snipes got the role of George Washington.
Hold on, Bill.
That should go to a white guy.
What's the big fucking Broadway hit where all Puerto Ricans play white guys?
Hamilton.
There's no one white guy in it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Bert. Who gives a shit?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't give a shit either. I love when, what's his face, and Son of Sam was playing an Italian guy.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Leguizamo?
Oh, my God, he's one of my favorite actors ever. I don't give a fuck what he plays. I just want to see what he's going to do with it.
Yeah.
Wait.
But I get it the other way. It gets sort of blurred. It got, like, out of control. It's just like, you're not giving us any opportunities. You need to give us opportunities. I get that. And then the overcorrection comes where it's like, hey, you're not really missing an arm. There should be a one-armed actor playing that one-armed guy. It's just like, because now you're ignoring the business. It's just like, buddy, millions of dollars are at stake here, and they need to get it back. If you can find me a bankable one-armed actor to play this fucking role that's going to have a $30 million opening weekend, that's how the suits are thinking. It's not like, it's not necessarily a you know, fuck these one-armed actors things. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't like how I started that thing and then DC slowly slipped into the shadows in case that went viral. I'm buying your cacti.
I know, man. I'm trying to keep kind of deserty here, you know?
I always feel tricked when a movie about Martin Luther King and then realize the guy that played Martin Luther King has a British accent. And I'm like, oh, fuck. rock.
That was like The Wire. Half those guys, like McNulty, was like, they're trying to talk in this Baltimore accent. It's like, well, you know, it's you know, but they, listen, let the English guys play us. It's fine. They do a great job.
I don't
care. They do a great job. You know,
I love when you see the interview and they have a completely different accent.
Yeah.
I, that makes me like, wow, this person's really good at it.
Yeah.
Dude, how about Louis Schaefer? Louis Schaefer changed the village.
Oh.
He was the first guy. He brought barking back. Came down there.
Yeah.
Black people, Louis Schaefer. Black people love Louis Schaefer. He would yell that across the street. They'd be like, who the fuck is this guy? Beautiful black ladies. We have a comedy show. Louis Schaefer, not gay. And then we would have them laughing all the way into the club. Ooh, big burly men. Louis Schaefer. He was amazing. Going down the street and his penny loafers with his sport coat. And he became like a character in the village.
Yeah. Like the clipboard. He had the clipboard. Are you, you know, it was like trying to get in the limelight in the 80s. You know, with that clipboard. Are you going to make the list? You know, oh, Bill Burr, not on the clipboard tonight.
I know. Then he kind of got drunk with power. And he became, he became that guy at like Studio 54. Hey, hang on a second. I do have to take it real quick. Hey, Dad, let me call you right back. I'm finishing this podcast, okay? Okay, bye. He never says bye.
I see him on Facebook now, and he's pissing off everybody in England because he's like a COVID denier now. He's like, it's just the flu. It's just the flu. And he also has and he posts his diet. It's like he does shit to inflame. It's so funny. His diet is like this all butter and meat and like duck eggs for breakfast and lamb fat.
Listen, we've all done a deep dive on the internet and ended up in a place we didn't need to be.
People get so inflamed, man.
Dude, if you listen to my podcast from like 10 years ago, dude, I was so into conspiracy theory and shit. I made like a Federal Reserve pumpkin. I carved that was my thing. This is the scariest thing on Halloween. And people were just like, all right, can I have a Milky Way? I was an idiot. Not saying I was wrong about the bankers, but it's just like I was wearing people out. I was that guy who was just saying the sky is falling and I had no solutions whatsoever.
I spent more time with Louis Schaefer than any one comic ever should have spent with Louis Schaefer.
Yes.
I spent every day. I'd get to the club at like 7 at the Boston Comedy Club, open it up, put the chairs down, and then bark with him until midnight, and then hang out with him at the Bagot until 2 in the morning. Yeah, and then me, Patrice, and Voss went to Scotland with him for a month. Yeah, I remember the first time I worked with
Louis. Oh, did you do Edinburgh?
Yeah, I did Edinburgh with Patrice and Voss and Louis. I remember the two times I've seen Louis bomb the hardest was the first night I worked at the Boston Comedy Club. I get there early. I don't know anything. I set the chairs up. I have all my CDs with me. So I go to the CD and I'm like, what music should we play? I go, oh, fuck that. You know what we'll do? It's a comedy club. I'm going to put in Richard Pryor. So I put in Richard Pryor, hit play, and I start seating it. I'm seating it well. It's like 25 people in there. Louis isn't there yet. He'll be there right at showtime, he says. So all of a sudden, I come in. The crowd's laughing their fucking ass off. There's no one on stage. They're listening to Richard Pryor. Show starts. I cut Richard Pryor. Everyone goes, boo. Go, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Louis Schaefer. He goes, I can't follow Richard Pryor.
Handsome man, handsome black man.
This jacket, Armani-ish.
Holy shit, man. Oh, that guy was brutal, man. I remember like the open micers were gone. There was one girl that went on and she got off and Louis came up to her. He's like, honey, you're in the wrong. This is not for you. And she's crying like this. She got tears coming out of her face. He's like, never. And I said, Louis, let it. this is her first time up there, man. You know what? Now it's just, she doesn't belong in this business. You go away, leave, never come back to this place again. Never. And he's got the blazer, and it's very official with the clipboard and the blazer. It's like you're getting a parking ticket or something, or like, you know, like a, you got pulled over by a state trooper or something. You know, imagine if you're new and this guy comes up and
it's, I know, like, you know, what's funny. They always have that person in a movie. When they show somebody trying to make it in show business, they're just so right to your face mean. And I always laugh going, it's not that mean. It's passive aggressive. They're just like, okay, all right, Dad, great job. We'll see you later. And I fuck that guy. But every once in a while, you would run into somebody. Yeah, I had a guy, I auditioned for a fucking half hour special on something. And he was just fucking talking just to hear himself talk. And he was trying to tell me and Kerry Louise that if you haven't moved out to LA by the time you're 27 or 28, you're not going to make it. You know, and I was like 32 and she was like 31. And we're just looking at this fucking guy. And we're just like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. But you would run into those types of people. And it was actually a good thing for you to run into them because, you know, if you can't handle somebody like that, you're not going to make it. If you're actually going to listen to that, because I saw guys do that out here in L.A. There was a club owner out here who was trying to get his clients onto sitcoms. And so he would just say, like, he'd just be like, Bert, you look like you build motorcycles. You go on stage and all you do is do jokes about building motorcycles. But I don't build motorcycles. Just you do that. You want stage time, you do that. And most comics would be like, hey, you go fuck yourself. I'll work another club. But I saw guys actually do that.
Yeah.
Completely change their act. And then it didn't work. And, you know, I don't know, dude. It was really early on in stand-up is like watching. You ever see like when those baby turtles get hatched? And they're all running to the beach trying to make it to the ocean. You're just rooting for them. And there's those seagulls just coming in and fucking picking them off. It's so fucking unfair. That's kind of what those early years were like.
Who were they when they would go? Because you would get that development conversation of what's your development set? What was your development angle, DC?
Oh, man. You see, for me, it never jived, you know. And I'm sure you guys, everybody's heard this a lot. But they were like, you know, we don't know what to do with you. That was the first thing. And then they would try and get me to agree to have people basically do what Bill was saying. Like, I'm the motorcycle guy or I'm the dating guy. And I'm like, well, I'm not really the dating guy. You know,
you should have been auditioning for procedural shows. You would have killed it. Yeah. From Law and Order to ER. You had a great look. But they were so looking at like Tim Allen and Drew Carey and Roseanne and Cosby, and it's just like comedian, sitcom, built around act.
Exactly. And my act was, you know, at that time, as I was doing pretty much straight characters. I didn't really do the stories as much. That came a little later, but it was straight characters, which really didn't have that much to do with how I looked or anything. So it wasn't just a slam dunk where they could put it together and be like, oh, here's the show built around this guy doing characters, unless he's psychotic or something, you know, and has a multiple personality disorder or some shit. I mean, it was just not, it was never really easy to, I'm not a great marketer anyway. Some guys have that thing, but it was never really easy to kind of be like, this is my voice. It's kind of comprised of a lot of different voices. You know, that was not a concept back then. And, you know, maybe more so now, I don't know. But it was, I was kind of a tough sell on it, you know,
Yeah, but that was only because there was one sell.
Yeah.
They were just trying to get you like a sitcom. I remember one of the last ones deals that I saw that went, and then you just literally watched a guy blow up, was Kevin James. I was at Montreal, I think it was 97. I was there, but I was sort of invited, but not really. It was bad. I know I was there. Nobody else knew I was there. And I remember the buzz about Kevin James. And I remember the breakfast and seeing him sitting down with these agents and talking and stuff. And I always wondered, like, was I literally watching. I can still remember. This is back when it was at the Delta, I believe. So there was the bar that turned into sort of the breakfast thing in the morning. I remember seeing him sit down because I had opened for him at Governor's in Long Island. And I wasn't sure if he remembered me. So, you know, I was real shy, so I didn't say anything. But I remember watching him and being like, wow, man, I heard he's getting a deal and blah, 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 blah. And then, like, I think like a year later, I was at the Laugh Factory or something like that. It was just from the new hit show, King of Queens, Kevin James. And it was like one of those other, it was yet another one of those moments where it was like, it was right there and it was a million miles away. Huh. Yeah. It's exciting though, man. It was cool, a really exciting.
I love to see it when it's like, you know, especially when it's someone who's been kicking around a while, you know, they've been kicking around a little bit and then boom, you see all these, all the agents just swarm.
Yeah.
Swarm up. You're like, flap, 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 flap. You know,
you remember that bit Kevin James used to do about how guys pick out cards and how women pick out cards?
Dude,
this fucking guy, it was unbelievable. It's like, he doesn't talk for like 3 minutes and is murdering. Does he do the guy first? I think he does the woman first. And it was just, he would just sit there and just do this whole thing where he would just pick out the card and read it. And he did all of this stuff with his face and do that and then see something else. And then he just kept going and going and going. And the way he was doing it, it was fucking, it was unbelievable. I never forgot it. And then in the end, he had the guy come in and just grab something, looks at it, be like, and it puts it in his pocket and walked away. Dude, it was just... Dude, it was masterful. And I remember that was, you know, when I was jumping around the stage, sweating, dropping F-bombs. Not like I don't drop F-bombs now, but like I was just trying to survive and just watching him going up so relaxed and just he just had him in the palm of his hand. And then like years later, I would watch him on King of Queens and you saw that stuff in his face and what a great actor he was.
I remember your army bit about not wanting to join the army, about not wanting to be getting yelled at all the time. Like you, Maggie.
Oh, me? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That was a great bit, man.
I did that on one of those USO things. Oh, you were there. Remember that Comedy Central? We did some base in Jersey.
We were sitting there,
and you sat down in the chair in this big green room. And looked up, and you were like, you looked at the ceiling, like, is that a fucking bat? And there was just a bat just stuck to the ceiling. He wasn't hung upside down, he was like curled up on the ceiling.
Doing sit ups.
Yeah, what do we do with this thing? It's like, all right, let's just sit on this side of the room and hope that fucking thing doesn't wake up.
It wakes up, hey man, you're on fire.
Hey Barry told me to take the check, just put it in my little foot claw here. He's gonna fly it back to New York and you're gonna get your $40 by Wednesday.
Oh shit.
DC, I remember one time, one of the few times I ever saw you get heated. I was just telling you a story about what somebody did to me. I was doing a Roger Paul gig in like Burlington, Vermont. Just, you know, get on the fucking 87 and drive until they say last exit before Canada and then make a right into Vermont. And I was playing this hotel and there was this guy I was working with and he was one of these 80s guys who probably was headlining Satellite Rooms and had now bumped down and he was middling. And he was supposed to do like 25. And the first show, he did 37. It's like, I was like, whoa, what the fuck, man? He goes, oh, sorry, I didn't see the light, right? Or he did like 30 or something like that. And then the second show, he did 37. So then I talked to him Saturday night. We did two more shows. And all I remember was on the last show, he did 50 minutes. And I was so gullible. I was like, How does he keep missing the light? Can you, like, I didn't know what was going on. And I told you that story. And dude, your eyes just lit up. He goes, you know what I do with that fucking guy like that? You know what I do? Oh, you know what? You close. And then you do fucking 50 in front of him. Be like, how do you like that? I just saw you. I remember you were sitting in the booth when they used to have those boots at the comic strip. I was like, all right, DC's got a little fire in him.
Yeah, I could see that would be one of the, you know, well, Patrice used to do that to me in the city, you know, with the, it sort of was one of the things to let
up. Oh, he was the worst with that.
And so I think, I wonder if that was around that time when that was already hot, you know, that like I was already pissed about that. Like that may have just happened the week before with Patrice doing 40 at the strip before I'm supposed to go on for my 15. You know what I mean?
Dude, Patrice could spot a hack walking into a club three blocks away, but he couldn't see a light fucking 20 feet in the back of the room. They gave me the light? I didn't see it. Shut the fuck up. You saw it. And then he'd just laugh.
Shit. Yeah. Yeah. We got into it about that. But yeah, that is definitely, yeah, man. I mean, shit. We got to have some decorum here with that. You talk to the guy, you talk to him twice. He still does it longer on the Saturday.
Dude, I was so
and then gullible. And then it fucks up your head because you're angry going on stage. I had a guy one time go long. And then the guy and the girl in the front row remember when you wore earpieces all the time? Like people just wore their phone in their ear nonstop. Hang on, don't go anywhere, fucking children. And then he just gets a mic and he goes, you know what? Fuck you, fuck, and starts lighting them up and goes, you're a cunt. And then he just goes, all right, that's my time. And he walks off. And I'm like, oh, I gotta fucking follow that. And he had already gone long. And now they're heated and they just brought it in with me. I was like, God damn it.
That happened to me in Cincinnati with some guy. He fucking went over. And then he went over a second time and I gave him shit about it because he was trying, oh, I go, dude, you do know it's a big red light because I'm sitting there going, another Burlington, Vermont guy, right? And so the next show, first show Saturday night, he fucking pouts and does like 8 minutes. And leaves me like with like fucking an hour and 20 minutes to do when I didn't have it. I still did the time. And I got off stage. And I think he came up and said something to me. I go, dude, you're a fucking baby. You're a fucking baby. Do your fucking time. I go, you think I never was a middle act? I did my fucking time. Fucking jerk off. You do 8 minutes. Like you act, oh, I don't know. You don't have a fucking what? Dude, I was so fucking mad at that guy. He didn't talk to me for the rest of the fucking weekend. Acted like a fucking baby. Just a fucking baby.
By the way, my daughter is sitting right here going, so this is what you do for a living. You just talk about guys. Come here, Georgia. Georgia, this is DC Benny and Bill Burr.
Hey, Georgia. Hey, Georgia. Yeah. How you doing? I'm bitching about an opener from 20 years ago. I still haven't let it go.
Where are you
going? Don't become like me. Be like your dad.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Be like DC. DC's hanging out with his dad right now. What did you need? What did you need?
I'm just letting you know that I was going on
high. And people are going with you?
Yeah.
It's not you by yourself. No. You're bringing a dog?
No.
But it's you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going with other people.
Grab that taser if you want it. All right. I love you.
Yeah. Georgia, don't do what your dad would do.
Don't do what your dad would do ever. Okay. All right. Just be better. Be better. Love you. Fuck. Fuck. All right. Squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break around the house, you take care of it. However, when there's something off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it now. Go to GetRoman.com/BillBurt now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED and all other forms of comfort and privacy, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate,
pump it up.
If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. with free 2-day shipping. My bad. I fucked up, Bill. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. To get things started, it's super simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BillBurt and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home.
What goes up must come down. Do, do, do. Fucking EDs. going round.
Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare
professional.
Jack
your fucking dick to ExpressVPN.
And take care of
Put some menthol deodorant out your fucking ball bag.
Go to GetRoman.com/Bilbert now. You'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, to get started today, if you get started today, you'll save $15 off your first order of ED treatment.
Have your dick standing up at the national anthem once again, like it did back in the 80s.
Oh, man. Look at all this time that's passed from when we were all young and running around there. And now, you know, the guy's got kids and it's crazy, man. Crazy.
I'm in the part not enjoying them because they're older and they're challenging you. And like you, if you say anything, like we got into a big heated discussion about catcalling the other night. And my daughters don't want like losing a conversation. And so they were like, they said something to the effect, we get catcalled all the time in our neighborhood. And I was like, the fuck you do? No one catcalls in our fucking neighborhood. And they're like, they do. And I said, who? And they said, the gardeners. And I said, okay. Okay, I get it. And then I said, so you're saying Mexican guys? And they're like, no, Dad, it's not just Mexican guys. I go, well, you said gardeners. I've been around our neighborhood. It's not a lot of white gardeners in our neighborhood. And then they're like, construction
Unless
workers.
They make a movie about gardeners, then we'll have a bunch of white guys playing the Mexicans. Right.
And then they go, construction workers. And I go, it's not fucking construction workers either. Okay. I go, no. I go, that's fine. They're Mexican also. I go, just say Mexicans. And then I'm fine with that. But they go, no, Dad, a lot of 50-year-old white men catcall us. And I go, bullshit. Show me his fucking house and I will knock on his door right fucking now. And they're like, Dad, you'd be shocked. A lot of grown men catcall us. And I was like, so then we had this conversation. Then she goes, hey, I'm going to go for a hike. I go, the fuck you are. You're getting catcalled left and right. And apparently it's just white dudes doing it on a hike and run. You just show me that pussy, baby. Like, so
the gardener's jumping out of the bushes and running again.
Fucking, oh, and my daughters are legit. And it's, I get, you don't want racist kids, I guess, but like legit social justice, like,
yeah,
they call you on everything. And you're like,
I guess you don't want racist kids, I guess.
Maybe they're fun to be around. Who knows? But like, they're social justice warriors. Like, and if you say something, like if I, like, you know, batting an idea around is about a joke, you can just see them go, hey, you shouldn't say that. And you're like, oh, fuck off. Not everything's funny, Dad. And you're like, no, those braces in your mouth, you'd be shocked what I said to get those.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever be trying out bits with my kids.
No,
try them out with my wife, and she's just like,
yeah, it's a hard audience.
And then I get upset and I'm like, why am I mad at her? I knew it was going to go this way. You're going to say that? Good night, honey. Going to go off to work now.
But that's a good barometer, though. Wives are a tough audience. Like, I know if I can get my wife to laugh, I know the thing definitely has a shot.
That's the truth. No, if I make my wife laugh, I know it's funny, but she could be an easier crowd.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, your wife is first show Friday night every fucking day.
I've had DC's wife tell me to stop telling a joke. I remember that distinctly. Oh, I remember I had a joke about fighting a black guy. It was a true story. And at the end of the joke, he's going like, he's beating my ass and he stops. And he goes, I'll stop if you just say the N-word. And there was a bunch of black guys around. And I was like, excuse me? He's like, say it. You know you want to say it. Say it, motherfucker. Say it. And I was like, oh, I will later, but not now. Like, now would be a good bad time. And your wife came up to me and she was like, it's really funny. I just the N-word part. Like, don't, like, lose it. And I went, really? And she goes, yeah, I would just lose it. And I was like, for real? And she was like, yeah. And I ended up doing doing that joke on a Comedy Central.
But did you make that up? That didn't really happen.
No, it really happened. Oh, it really happened. Really,
what is wrong with Florida? Why did you go all white chick there? Oh my God, it like really happened.
Dude, Florida was fucked up. I have to say, was very.
I know you got Tom Brady and things are looking up down there, but let's come on.
Wait, you think Florida is worse than Boston?
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Way worse. Dude, Boston is just is the excuse. Like, all they do, they act like racism is just in the South and in Boston. Yeah. They ignore Chicago, Milwaukee. Dude, the fucking shit that I have heard in all of these, dude, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Pittsburgh. Dude, in Pittsburgh, the at the Improv, the other side of the tracks was literally the other side of the tracks. Like, you walked across train tracks. And it's like, oh, here's where all black people are. Dude, it is like, and then Florida gets a pass because people get to act like it's not the South because you have Disney World and SeaWorld. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, that Northern Florida, Miami, because everybody skips, everybody blows by. Like, it's weird about Florida. Florida's a flyover state and a destination state all at the same time. It's called Miami. And they fly over all of that shit. All the date raping up on Daytona Beach, they go past that. All the rednecks with the balls hanging off their trucks in Tampa and Gainesville, they go by all of that. And they go right into the cocaine and Botox in Miami.
Yeah. Tough call, man. Tough call with those two places.
But my thing about I'm not defending Boston. It's just Boston. It's known.
Yeah.
It's known. And oh, my God, the amount of fucking white people that try to tell me how bad Boston is. And I just go, where are you from? And then I tell them my road story.
Yeah. I mean, going to school in Tallahassee, there was, I mean, not even joking, there was FAMU and FSU. And there was no intermingling. Like, there was no, like, you know, mixers where, and I used to drive this thing called Safe Escort, where I would I'd walk girls across campus, and on weekends I'd drive them. And on weekends, every fucking weekend, same 11 girls would call me to take them to a FAMU party. And you could never, like, once someone was in your car, you had to take them wherever they would go. And man, it would be one girl, Vanilla. I remember this girl so well. She introduced me to Wu-Tang Clan. And yep, Vanilla. She thinks she lived in Debney Hall. And they go, you got to
purchase dropping names and locations.
Yep. Oh,
people have new identities now. They have lives. Fuck.
I would love for Vanilla to fucking hit me up. That girl was awesome. I would love to reach out to people.
As a married man, you don't need a woman named Vanilla hitting you up.
You can't get all up, man.
Bird, who are you talking to? Friend from the past, Vanilla.
Oh, the shit Bert I learned.
Coco, we're thinking of coming out to LA. Bert, you hang up on that stripper immediately.
I remember being in the car driving her and a bunch of her friends to a party at FAMU, and they were talking about the way I smelled. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you smell like a wet dog. And I was like, what? And they're like, all white people. And they just started sniffing me. And I was laughing so fucking hard at the idea that they thought I smelled like a wet dog. And then they got out.
Baloney.
And then I'm in the car going, I can't smell it. You know when people smell, but they can't smell themselves? And I'm like, fuck, the whole ride of this car just still smells like a wet dog.
You gotta lick your own balls and impress them. That's what you have to do. Get the wet dog smell. Look how flexible I am. Roof, roof.
Oh, where did you go to high school in DC?
I got kicked out of a couple schools. I ended up going to school, graduating in Maryland. Bethesda Chevy Chase High School, Maryland.
Get kicked out of school for?
I got in trouble so much. I remember the principal came up to me. He's like, look, you're after school every day, just fucking around. I couldn't handle being in classrooms and, it was a bad thing.
No, I get it. I'm picturing jumping out of your own skin. Day. Like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
That's all I could think was getting the fuck out. I couldn't, it was terrible. It was a terrible mix for me. So he goes, you're after school every day. And I was failing science. And I could not figure out how to, you know, I actually was trying to cheat off of this kid. And I got busted by the teacher of the class. So the principal comes up to me. He's like, look, you're after school every day. You might as well make a little money at it. Why don't you be the janitor's assistant? Just help out the janitor after school. So you got a little job. So I was the assistant janitor every day. And it was a Jamaican janitor named Paul, right? And Paul was kind of became like my Mr. Miyagi, right? And one day I was telling him, I was like, Paul, man, you know, I'm failing this chemistry class, science class. There's no way I'm gonna pass them. I have to go at least summer school or I may get held back. There's no way, no matter how I study, I'm gonna pass this thing. And I got busted cheating, but cheating's the only way. So he goes, I'll get busted cheating. And I was like, well, he goes, what the teacher do? There was a gay teacher. So he's like, what the body boy him do? What the body boy do? I'm like, he goes up, he gives the exam out. And then he cleans the board. He goes, I'm cleaning the blackboard. What property the blackboard have when you put what upon it? I'm like, what property does it have? It gets wet. And he goes, no, man, think, man. It gets shiny. I was like, shiny, shiny. He goes, what happened when you look upon something shiny? And I said, you see a reflection. He goes, you see the reflection? He sees the reflection of you cheating with the dude. And he goes, what you do just there? And I said, I don't know. He goes, science. Science. So, that janitor helped me pass that class before I got kicked out. But, you know, I bounced around a bit. Science.
So did you start, you started out with like Tony and Chappelle and all of those guys?
Tony had a room.
Tony Woods, everybody.
Yeah, Tony Woods had a room. There was a place called the Comedy Connection in Greenbelt, Maryland. And Tony would host there. There was a guy named Chris Thomas who would host there. And I did a talent show at University of Maryland. I had seen this dude, Rondell Sheridan, the week before doing stand-up. And I'm like, I got to try this. So I did a talent show at University of Maryland. I don't know, 80-something. I don't know, 87, something like that. And and I got some laughs, and there was this comedy club, but it was a black comedy club. It was the Comedy Connection, and Tony put me on, and I would do this McDonald's drive-through thing, man. Like, I brought a little hairnet, and I would play like all the characters, like a Japanese guy going through a McDonald's drive-through in the ghetto, and then put the hairnet on and the fucking glasses. I mean,
that must have murdered.
It was great. It was great, man. And I had all kinds of props. You know, I was like an ethnic Carrot Top, you know. I just posted an old video. It was like my first TV appearance, which was the Apollo. And the other ones have been out there, but this one, I lost it. I couldn't find it anywhere. And I finally found it. The quality's horrible. But dude, I have a fucking mullet. I got props. I'm doing Shabba Ranks, singing country music. I've got like, I got a jacket full of props in this thing, and I'm looking back at it. And it's like, it's embarrassing to watch it, but it was, you know, I'm doing a kung fu movie mouth. You know, your mouth's become my teacher, all that shit. So I just found that stuff. It's funny to look back at the old stuff, but it was like the concentrate back then. I would just do the characters and the concentrate and then go on the next thing. There was no like, oh, we kind of get this guy's voice. It was just like bit, you know, from, and I think that was from being in the black rooms where you really gotta, especially if you're white, you gotta bring that shit, man. You cannot, as Dean Edwards say, there's no time for exposition. You know, you gotta fucking bring the concentrate.
I thought white guys had it easier after the first joke. It was just getting that first laugh. And then after, it was just like, then you became like the mascot.
I think, but also sustaining a period of time, because you could be a mascot for a little while and then it would kind of peter off.
No, not like a really, really deep into the hood crowd.
Uh-huh.
Like those crowds had like an 8-second attention span. If you just were not just captivating, the second you dip from 100% to 98%, you'd see people just start looking around.
Yeah.
Dude, there was no crowd that was easier to fucking lose than crowds like that.
And if you heard,
oh man, I remember. Do you remember Roz G? Right? I hope she's doing all right. I heard she had some medical stuff, but it kind of came back around. I think she's all right, dude. I remember doing a fucking room with her. Oh, what's his face's room? The dude with the cat eyes. Used to say the green eyes. Gerald Kelly. Jerry. Oh, there was some other comedian that went by cat eyes. He was green eyes, right? Gerald Green Eyes Kelly, his early headshots, right? So he had this fucking room way out in Jersey. So we went, we went out to do that one. And I remember he was late, so we were stretching. I remember Roz G being up there, and she fucking always murdered. And she was not having a good set. And then that's when I was just going, like, first I was like, oh, fuck, I got to follow Roz G. But then she was having a tough time, and she gave the funniest fucking outro ever to introduce me. She just did like a 40th fucking joke that fell flat, and then she just goes, God damn. I don't know who the fuck's coming up next, but he better be funny, because you motherfuckers ain't laughing at shit.
Oh, yeah.
And then she brought me up, and I literally... I'm like, hey, how's it going? And then like three people, how's it going? I was doing like the Richard Pryor fucking white guy voice. And I was just like, just losing altitude, losing. Those ones were, it was bad enough to bomb in those rooms. But when you had to make a journey out there.
Oh, yeah.
Just that fucking 40-minute fucking ride over to the fucking PATH train.
Oh, yeah. I remember those well.
I remember Gerald showed up like 2 hours late and the crowd was all grumpy. And then he went up there and he started talking about how much money he made at doing Comic View. Just got back from Atlanta doing Comic View, made six G's, which was total bullshit because they paid you. Everybody got, they're like, comics went on strike. They paid like $500 or something for those spots. All inclusive. You like lost money when you did it. And this dude shows up 2 hours late and then lies about how much money he made down in fucking Atlanta. I thought they were gonna kill him.
Those rooms were crazy, man. Those rooms. I had long years of those rooms, and then I kind of, you know, the Boston for me was mainstream, and then I, you know, that's what's so funny, you know. And then I kind of, you know, I haven't really been back, you know, to that so much. To that to once in a while I'll pop in. It was a like. Oh God! There was one in Brooklyn. There's a couple in Brooklyn. I'll do once in a while or whatever. But man, those really shaped you. And you know, it was, if you could kill there, and if you could kill at the Boston, it really, I felt like nothing. I didn't really worry about anywhere else.
Yeah, you were swinging with a weighted bat. You had, so then when you went out to do the strip or like stand up New York or Caroline's, you're like, oh my God, there's security.
Yeah.
People are following, you know, looking at the
no
light.
No one's going to prison in the front row tomorrow.
Yeah, there's no metal detectors. I mean, this shit's fucking, this is easy.
You had such an ability. You had so many different muscles with stand up. Like when you, well, I didn't realize it, but I remember your ability to almost like, flurry punch a crowd, which I, you know, you learn in the black rooms. I remember that so well on those Friday, Saturday night spots where if for whatever reason, based on timing, you were planted like either second or third, there was no following you. Like no, and I remember just watching that room, the Boston just get so fucking
the crowd would take a break for the next two comics.
Oh yeah.
Like that was the thing. That's what I used to say to people who would bitch about fucking, you know, the New York comedy scene. I would say to them, I'd be like, when was the last time you went up on stage and you killed so hard that the crowd just took a break for the next two fucking comics? Because we've all been that comic on stage where you feel them wishing the other guy was still there.
Yeah, we all have. There's no doubt, you know. No doubt about that. Well, it was, listen, man, I'm grateful for those times. I'm grateful for those times. They're great. I don't know now it's so weird now. I don't know what's happening. I've been kind of.
I think it was easier back when we did it. Fucking poor kids, when they're coming up and everybody in the crowd is like fucking J. Edgar Hoover, right? With the fucking camera trying to like, and almost on purpose, either because of an agenda or they just want to get clicks, trying to like do what CNN and Fox News do. They're trying to create this frenzy of shit. I feel bad for that they don't get to develop. Because like how bad, you know, I was when I started out, like it's not on YouTube. I always tell young comics, I'm like, listen, I know you want to make a name for yourself, but like you're going to fucking hate your shit.
Yeah.
If you're doing the work, you're going to hate your shit within 6 months. Forget about in 6 years. You're not going to want this shit up there. Just like, but it's probably bad advice because I don't understand how the game works now. So, but like, I will tell you this though, I've been doing a lot of spots down and this new young generation that's coming up, the one after the millennials, they're a lot more chill, I think. I think like too much got put on millennials as far as pressure. They had to fucking care about all the mistakes that we made. And like, this seems to be a more fun, laid back. Like I've been having, maybe I changed. I don't think I did, but like I find them to be really fun.
Well, it seems like there's a nostalgia, and I hate to even use that word, but for what we kind of did back in the day, it's almost like a vintage comedy brand or something where you could actually say shit that was funny and
take my wife, please. Yeah.
You know, it's like that to them. So I feel like hopefully some of the gloves can come off with this shit a little bit and we can just do what we were doing. But it is a little, it's concerning.
No, but you can.
You know?
You can. I don't know. I always try not to talk about this to give it more steam, but it's just kind of fun to talk about. I don't know. It always ends up in this place. But yeah, we do. I think we are vintage. If you look at all the white hair and all of our beards here, I think, yeah, we definitely.
Say it in my good ear, Bill. Say it in my good ear. Yeah. Oh, my God.
By the way, you're special. You're special on all things comedy. DC is fucking awesome.
Thank you, bro.
It really is. I you know, it's fun. It's fun showing comics to my daughters and watching them laugh and then go, wait, you know this guy? And I'm like, yeah, I fucking know all of them. Like, Jesus Christ.
You know this guy.
No, but you also had great taste in like a cinematic thing to you. The way you shot like your storyteller stuff that you used to do in that little bar downstairs off of Houston Street. Yeah. And so I knew when your special came out, I knew it was going to look great.
A drift in predicament.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, guys. You know, that I appreciate that you guys got behind it for me, you know, and you know, it's hard to get your stuff out there and to have a platform like what you guys have built. I can't say how grateful I am that, you know, you put it out there for me. And it's a very, I just wanted to do an old school special. There's no fucking leather pants and DJ and you know what I mean? And I backup dancers is just a guy in a club with a mic telling some funny stories, you know, that are gonna, you know, some people will get offended, but hopefully most will laugh. And it's in black and white. We tried to get it like Raging Bull looking, you know, and with on a budget and that's what we did, man. And I'm thankful you guys remembered me. And you know, as I may have talked about with Burt before, you know, we came up with everybody, but a lot of times when guys kind of blow up, they're untouchable and they forget. They don't, you know.
Oh yeah, I know guys like that. Yeah, it's like they're in a bubble, and they as they pass through, like, hey man, I guess we're friends. Where'd you go? they just kind of as they keep ascending. It just the back end closes off.
Hey, I'll give you a call. Call my assistant. Wait, what? Huh? Okay, never mind.
Oh, hey.
But you know, it's probably a result of like so many people being, oh, hey man, could you do this for me? Hey man, could you do that for me? Could you do this for me? I mean, it's like when that must happen a lot, you know, and you get kind of you get a kind of armor from them, and then you build the bubble and you're like, yeah, call my assistant, you know. But I've gotten a few of those call my assistants. I'm like, wait a minute, we were just, I'm not even asking. I just said hi. I don't
I'm talking you. To you right now. Can't you just give me your number, the one in your pocket? DC, I'll tell you.
You guys' faces, I can actually interact with you. I appreciate it that you haven't put yourself in a bubble on the fucking mountain somewhere, you know.
Right, I think that's what we're doing wrong, man. We got to be a little more aloof. I need an assistant.
Oh, man.
DC, call my assistant and we'll coordinate a time to do this podcast.
I gotta say this so that
Andrew,
people
I know
it.
I realize I'm describing the producer. You know what I mean. I don't have a 24/7.
I gotta say this. You know, DC is mainly responsible for the movement, the shift, in my opinion, when in storytelling and comedy, because at a time when we talk about doing these rooms and having all the different muscles and flutter punching and making sure you can survive, DC opened a room. I will say I helped for the first 3 weeks, but DC opened a room with Ben Bailey.
Ben Bailey, yeah.
Where it was straight storytelling. And I remember I did the first 3 or 4 weeks there, and I just helped promote it. But I'll tell you, every story I told went on my first special. And it was like and it was a place that was unlike anywhere in the city where you could do stories, straight stories where beginning to end, and I saw some comics melt down. Yeah. Melt. I saw some big comics. You know who I'm talking about. Give up on their story and start telling jokes. The biggest comics in the
their
world.
Act, yeah.
Yeah, go right back to their act. And DC and I were sitting watching, and he was like, he can't stay in the pocket. He can't stay in the pocket.
But yeah, it was silence. Silence scared a lot of people from our generation because it was just about like killing and stuff like that. But I'll tell you, two of the best storytellers there were was DC and Ben Bailey. So when you guys started that thing, I was psyched. I came down, but even then, I didn't feel like I could follow you guys. You guys, you were doing it every week.
We crushed it, man. That was the thing is we tried to set it up so people would feel safe there. Comics would feel safe to do that because it's a weird muscle. And it was great. I remember Robert Kelly had some story about like that about being in like foster homes or something like that, just like some crazy and like rubbing his arm to keep himself. And he somehow made it funny. That was the thing. It's like taking this often traumatic stuff and making it funny. You know, like I go back to my special, but my closing joke on it, you know, I was losing my mother from Alzheimer's. 7 years she had Alzheimer's. And it was like this crazy, a lot of funny shit happened that got us through that. But it took me a real long time to get to a place where I could like find a story in that and do it. And that room, I saw a lot of comics go to uncomfortable places. And I'm not talking like the Moth kind of shit where it's like, you know, it was Saturday night on, you know, 1967. I was, you know, a young lesbian. It was like just finding some stuff that you couldn't really get at the level we were at on stage at like the Boston or the Strip or whatever, because you were surrounded by guys doing, you know, just.
Yeah. And you would actually get shit if you weren't going up there, just killing, like the fuck are you trying, man? This is Friday night. Don't try that. Dude, one of my favorite things Bobby Kelly ever said on stage. And there's a lot of stuff that I love, but he was at the Cellar one night and he was doing a set and this woman was just making this face. And he goes, what's the problem, man? What is your problem? She goes, nothing. I just think you're a little crass. And he goes, oh, yeah? He goes, what were you doing when you were 14, huh? Were you a freshman in, you know, high school? Did you go to some sort of sophomore semi-formal? Your parents took you, blah, blah, blah. Is that what you did? She's like, yeah. She goes, yeah, well, I was in jail. So, yeah, I'm a little crass. And it was so fucking real. And I remember when he got off stage, I was going, Bob, that's what the fuck you need to talk about. You know, you got to fucking play. And he goes, dude, I got to showcase, dude. I got to bring my guns. I got to go with the big guns, dude. I'm going to talk about that. Don't talk about it. Because he was mad. Because she was a cunt.
Yeah.
I think you're a little crass. Ugh. Talk about foreshadowing things to come.
But that's a lot of, I feel like I'm not going to take credit for that, but I saw him do stuff there, and I saw a lot of guys do stuff there. Vic Henley, you know, rest in peace. It had a story about George Bush giving him a signed baseball and him being at this roast. And it was this hilarious story, but he would never tell it on stage. And I was like, dude, you got to tell that thing on stage. You got to tell it. And eventually it became like his closer at corporates. You know, he had this George Bush baseball story that was hilarious. George Bush is heckling him. He's going back and forth. And but it was great. It was just, that's what I loved about that place. That time was, you know, not to be just talk about the past or whatever, but it was, you know, I got to see guys who I respected and love, comedians who I love, come through there and talk about some shit I never heard before, you know? And I think the little audience that was there appreciated that, like that people were coming there. And if you went around the corner to see them at the Cellar or whatever, you're not going to hear this.
I bet we're this might be an outside chance here that we're just three old guys romanticizing when we came up. I'm sure these kids have their rooms and it's not as bad. These damn kids won't laugh at anything. It's because you're fucking 90 years old, you freckled cunt. All right, we got to wrap it up here. DC, it was such an honor to have you on here, dude. You've just had this quality to your work the entire time. You've never wavered. You never sold out, man. And I was so proud to be a small part of promoting your unbelievable special. Everybody, the unbelievable legendary DC Benny, man.
Guys, thank you. Love you guys, man. Take care. All right,
brother. Hope to see you soon.
You got it.
All right.